Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa buddhaṃ dhammaṃ saṅghaṃ namassāmi. So developing meditation, this, when you sit down, it's good to contemplate what's your intention. Why do you sit here? What's behind the efforts you make? Sometimes we're not even clear, we just do it because, for us, it's what monks do. You have breakfast and you meditate, that kind of thing. But if the intention isn't clear, then the way one puts forth effort isn't clear. If one isn't clear about the way one puts forth effort, then you don't really see cause and effect. You don't really see what's going on. So intentionality is the kind of knowing your intentions is the root of understanding the results of your intentions, obviously. So, what's your intention? Why do you meditate? What do you do? Sometimes it's like you don't. For those of us who meditate a lot, it can just be habitual. Just kind of sit down and do something. So, kind of having that kind of clear idea or clear sense or insight into what the purpose of meditation is obviously very, very important. So, where to take that? You could take, like in Buddhist philosophy, in all spiritual traditions, I think there's this, just the word religion and spirituality say, and language is kind of funny stuff, isn't it? So nowadays, the word religion sometimes is a pejorative word. There's so much disrespect for religion that you have to, well, have to, I ask people, are you religious? They said, no. I'm not religious, but I'm spiritual. And what does that mean? I mean, what do you mean? So, language is kind of funny stuff, isn't it? Language is just, our perceptions are built up, and then language defines those perceptions. And language can be used in all manner of ways. So, say, say the language in American politics, where I think like socialism is equated to communism. You can't use the word socialism there. In European political systems, you have social democrats. That's quite a common word. So sometimes cultures have words which are interpreted in very particular ways, or like the euphemisms they have, like collateral damage. So you bomb a village and the kids get crippled, so that's collateral damage, as if that's okay, Or harvesting whales, I like that one, as if it's wheat. This massive animal, I'll just harvest it because there's extra around. So language is, so the word like religion has a kind of pejorative, for some people, not for me, because I see, it's a word that is meaningful for me because I'm in a religious tradition. I'm very orthodox that way. But in terms of listening to Dhamma, Ajahn Chah would often say, listen with your heart rather than your head. Quite often when we're listening to Dhamma, we not quite often, but sometimes, we listen with a very kind of critical faculty, analyzing what the person's saying, is that right, is that wrong? And we end up actually just giving ourselves our own talk rather than actually listening to the teacher and what the teacher's saying. We get kind of caught, well, that's not right, or this isn't right. And sometimes it's just around language. It's just around a different use of the words. So like I'll give a talk and talk about religion, and people say, I don't do religion, I do spirituality. I was very influenced by a teacher called Krishnamurti, who was a great Indian teacher who died around 1990, I suppose. And he was very iconoclastic, very much dismissed all religious forms, and talked about awareness. And I realized when he taught that his dismissal of religious forms was the superstition around religious forms, the attachment to religious forms as entities in themselves rather than as vehicles which are productive of insight and helpful for understanding. And I once went to a, and so his teaching was about non-grasping from what I could see, not attaching to views and opinions and limitations and fixed definitions of people. And so I felt that I understood that within a very orthodox religious form. And I went, I was living in New Zealand at the time, and I went to a Krishnamurti meeting. I thought, oh, great, Krishnamurti meeting. And this would be fun, because I was very interested with teaching. And there was about a dozen people there, and I was trying to talk to someone, and the person was looking at me like I was an insect, because I had a robe on. Their whole mind was closed to what me, what I was as a human being, because I had a robe on. So they just define me as religious. You know, it's like, he's religious, obviously he doesn't understand Krishnamurti. And it was very frustrating. But that kind of way of interpreting life just through our biases and through our own ignorance, of course, prevents us from understanding others and also understanding ourselves. Because quite often we dismiss things in our own heart. We just push them away. That's not good. That's not right. That's wrong. And then our intentions, going back to why we meditate, then our intentions around what we're doing, our inner work that we're doing, is sometimes just to get rid of the bad guys and try to get some good guys. Just get rid of the thinking, get rid of the negative emotions, and just have peace. And if I don't see that intention, I'm just in there and this is kind of struggle, then that's very violent. That's not really peaceful or compassionate. It's just a sort of a suppressive, repressive attempt to just control the mind and have consciousness be a certain format, which I find that I approve of, and the other formats I don't approve of. Or we can just be so habituated to meditation that we just basically think for 45 minutes, just go off into, you know, some kind of gaga land, and then the bell rings. So that obviously isn't productive either. So I think first and foremost what we're trying to do in meditation is stay present to the way things are. And that in itself is a task and a half, isn't it? So that's why I was just encouraging a rather vigorous form of meditation just now, partially because I was feeling sleepy. It was a great lunch and didn't have much rest last night. But that's okay. You know, why not meditate with a difficult energy system? Why always meditate when I want to meditate? Why always meditate when it's comfortable to meditate? We don't really learn much. So, as my teacher would say, if you want to meditate, meditate. If you don't want to meditate, meditate. So today at 2 o'clock, I didn't want to meditate. Not badly, not any kind of neurotic, traumatic way. But here we are. This is a meeting. Well, why not? So I'll work with this. I'll work with this feeling that I have now of dullness and heaviness. And that, I think, and then what do I do with the dullness and heaviness? So just my basic intention is, can I stay present to the way things are? So whether it's in like a lot of energy or no energy, whether liking or disliking, you know, whether having a lot of memory or no memory, whether it's hot or cold, whether my cushion is comfortable or uncomfortable, whatever it is, can I stay present to the way things are? And that's a kind of, and if you make that a very clear intention in your practice, then you know what you're doing. If I don't make that a clear intention, and let's say I'm just feeling like there's a lot of restlessness, and then I try to get rid of the restlessness, and I try to get some other state of mind, I can be fighting with the way things are, but not really know the way things are. But if I make it a very, very clear and simple intention that first and foremost, my task in meditation and in life in general is to be present and know what is it like now, and I have that clarity, then it's actually much, much easier. So it's not about me being happy or liking or having emotions which are very open and compassionate and loving and all that. It's about the whole business of being human. So whether I feel upset about something that happened yesterday, or my mind's very, very clear and open and stable, it doesn't really matter. And that kind of willingness to be in all states of mind is much brings a kind of strength to our meditation practice, kind of willingness to be with whatever the situation brings forth. So monastic life, say, we have the privilege of having a very regular kind of pattern where we sit in the mornings, we sit in the evenings, sit in the mornings, sit in the evenings, and do that for many, many years. And you can imagine that for any number of years, how many of those meditations does a monk really want to go to? 10%? Probably that's it, you know. He'd be probably pretty indifferent. Well, it's okay, let's cancel meditation. But you don't. You just keep it going. So then over a period of time, especially after the first years, you begin to just appreciate, oh, it's just a time to sit and notice the mind. So the idea, I want to sit because I really feel like meditating now, that begins to fall away, and meditation you're just having your meal. That's all. You just have to eat. You just meditate. So it's no big deal. It's no big performance. It's no great religious exercise. But it's something that one does because one begins to appreciate the power of it. And this sense of the power of meditation to ground you in the present moment reality becomes apparent as you practice a lot. And so you really have to sort of invest some time into it. So the intention to present moment awareness is an awareness of not just a sort of analytical awareness. You know, sometimes we kind of know we're here, but we don't really make conscious the way things are. So sometimes I might know that I'm feeling annoyed by something or someone. I might kind of know I feel annoyed, but I don't really make that conscious. I just think about it. I might just think annoying thoughts about that person or that situation. I might just feel critical of myself. Oh, I shouldn't be annoyed. I really shouldn't be that way. But I don't really awaken to the very present moment reality of this type of mindset, which we would call annoyance. And that making conscious the way things are is one of the basics of Buddhist meditation. So this present moment reality, what is it like now? And making conscious this present moment. What is it really like now to be here, sitting here with this mind-body situation? So the way I like to instruct in that is just like when I ask you to be aware of your spine, and I say to you, what does your spine feel like right now? Unless you have like backache, you probably didn't notice your spine. Not that it wasn't there. Your spine was there, but you probably didn't notice the feelings in the spine, right? And then you say, make conscious the feeling in the spine. And I'm just working with distraction. So we'll work with that. Okay. So right now I'm just feeling my mind's distracted, right? Trying to get a talk, people come and go. So what does that feel like? Well, it doesn't feel nice, right? But if I stay with that, and it's interesting giving talks, you know, like, I'm glad the baby's not here. Giving talks, things are always happening, aren't they? You know, people get up and they come and they go and they look around. And so that's very distracting. What I like is if people pay attention and don't fall asleep. It's nice feeling. But if I'm present to the way things are, then the tendency to react to those distractions in me, I stay attentive to that even while I'm talking. So if I'm learning how to be present to the way things are, and I'm fully conscious to the way things are, if my mind is then beginning to react to something in a negative, positive, fearful, excited way, I have a chance of noticing that. And if I notice that, I have a chance of not following that if that's unskillful. Right? And so it's not just about meditation. It's not just about sitting here and practicing meditation. It's about the capacity to know the way things are and to watch how the mind moves into reactivity and suffering in the moment, rather than as some kind of abstract. And so meditative life is very pragmatic that way. The exercises that we do to stay present to the body, you know, like body awareness. Lots of people don't have much body awareness. They're not really they're not really incarnate. They are and they aren't. Quite often, people inhabit their thinking mind a lot, inhabit the kind of intellectual, cerebral realms, and their body, which is speaking volumes, really. They don't hear the body. They don't notice the body until the body gets sick, has pain or whatever. And so part of like present moment awareness is to learn how to read life through the body, not just through the analytical mind, because the analytical mind quite often is deluded. It's into let's say self-criticism, self-hatred. These are very deluding kind of energies that we suffer from as human beings, and then we just be caught in them. I know I've been caught in that a lot. Or critical of others, and judgmental of others. That's just a habit of mine. That's a mental kind of thing. We need analysis, we need to compare. Critical fact is not wrong. But when we're not aware of our critical facting, or when we're not aware of our fear of people or anxieties around people, then those energies, they just always rule us. So inhabiting the body, learning to meditate in the body, begins to help you to understand your mental reactions, your reactions through fear, whatever. So as these people were leaving, I could feel my body reacting. I could feel the kind of tension in my body. Not much, but I could stay with that. I just stay with that. Say, oh, it goes away. It's not a problem. 20 years ago, I would have been, I would have been annoyed and irritated, and that would have come out in my talk. But now I can notice the irritation arising, still keep talking, kind of keep the blah 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 going, right? But actually what I'm doing is I'm actually meditating on myself. That's what I'm doing. The talking is just kind of what I have to do now. So sometimes I eat, sometimes I talk. But all the time, because this is what a meditative life is about. It's not just about sometimes you meditate, right? That, and the rest of the time you're heedless. No. I mean, obviously it has to be 24/7. So the more one begins to just do that all the time. What is the body like? What is the mood of the mind like? One keeps awakening to that. Then in those situations where you get these inputs which are annoying, they're not bad. No one's to blame. It's just life. You can't make life perfect. You can't control life. It's just the way it is. You see the inputs, how they affect you. You see them go through you. You bear witness to them, they go away, you have no karma. You don't create any karma. You don't have any residue. You don't carry that stuff around for hours and hours and hours and days and days and days. Whereas when reactivity is not known and reactivity comes in, we get inputs which are in some way disturbing and we don't know how to be aware of them, they lodge in us. And then they either lodge in our body as stress or whatever. Then they can quite often go into the thought realms, and then we can think about them for hours, hours and hours. Now, what's that about? That's a very good way of looking at why in my life, in the responses I have, why can't I just burn things out as they arise? Why do my responses have to echo in my mind for a day? Or an hour, what's going on there? And that's important, isn't it? Isn't it like, you know, sometimes we do respond to life in a very pure way, don't we? We're present, we know what we're feeling, we respond from that feeling, there's no residue. Yeah? And you can sense, yeah, there's something appropriate about life. And then other times, because of our buttons get pressed, old things come up around a new situation, but they're old things. We can live in these residues for long, long periods of time. And so we find we're kind of caught up in kind of patterning of behavior, patterning of reaction, which is quite a lot of suffering. And we were talking after lunch about like the patterns that we as human beings have that are quite reactive how to break through some of those patterns. And I think the way for my training as a monk is through body awareness. Body awareness has a way of accepting or body awareness is a way of knowing the reactivity that we have in life situations, but not perpetuating that reactivity. For instance, if someone insults me, I'm going to feel it emotionally, because I'm still a work in progress. I'm not some kind of a enlightened turnip. You know, I still feel that. So if someone insults me, I'll probably feel that. Maybe not. Maybe some. Let's say I do. Let's say someone, make it stronger. Let's say someone who I've been kind to betrays me. There's a good, you know, something I've trusted a person, and then I find that behind my back they've stolen my car or my money or something like that, or been unfaithful. Okay, take that one. So let's say I'm in a relationship. I'm just trying to get a really nice, strong one in here. I'm in a relationship. I'm really faithful to the person. I'm very loyal to them. And I find that they've been cheating behind my back. And that's painful. That's awful. So I hear about it, and wham, I'm hit in the heart with that. And what to do with that? Keep the first precept. Don't kill the other person. So that's, keep the precepts. Don't kill the person, either of the people. Keep the precepts. But what to do with those emotional things that strike us so strong in life or in less strength? Well, if you have body awareness, what happens? You're gonna have feelings of betrayal and anger and all of that. But how do you process that? How do you be with that where it doesn't perpetuate for 10 years? This is an extreme example. You process it through the body. And if you look at memory, how memory works, when I remember something hurtful done to me by someone else, that memory comes up, and what does your mind do? Your mind thinks, that creep. Your mind starts to run with that, right? That's thought. And that thought is about me in the past and me in the future. It's always about time. But if I practice present moment awareness, if I practice body awareness, and this input has come, and now I'm churned by that, if I stay with present moment awareness, and I don't just run with the storylines, I don't just hate myself, I just stay with the bodily tensions, then I burn that off. I burn that off. There are no residues. I work with it right away. So maybe, you know, most of life isn't about huge betrayals. Most of life is just those little jabs that we get in life, the little insults and the, but they hurt too. They hurt too. Or the little disappointments or the little fears. And they affect your body too. They affect your mind, you know, your whole system. So the Buddha's teachings on mindfulness are this capacity to witness to the whole experience of being human. And the experience of human being is both mental, emotional, and physical. You know, it's like that. It's a system. It's a system. And these inputs that we get, they're kind of reaction that come from us, right? It's like I was saying the other night, it's like a wave. The wave comes in and the wave goes back. The wave comes in, the wave goes back. And usually we're just caught up in the waves of life. You know, we get disappointed and we fall into disappointing states of mind. We get excited and we get all excited, and then we fail and then we succeed. And so we're always in this ocean of activity, ocean of activity, ocean of activity. And going back to the idea of religion or spirituality, in religious language, you have these two words, immanent and transcendent. This is, you find that in most spiritual literature, immanent and transcendent. Akalika, ehipasiko, those kinds of words that we have in the Pali. Immanent, transcendent, immanent, transcendent. Immanent implies that there's always something here and now which is not the waves of the ocean. Transcendent implies that there is something here now which is not just the waves of the ocean. Immanent implies that it's always here now. So transcendent implies that there is this movement of input, sense input, memory, sight, sound, taste, emotional stuff coming into us, And then the reaction to that, in and out, in and out, in and out. So Trent, here they come again. Come on in, just as I was getting into the good part. I wish you wouldn't do this. So transcendence. That's a really nice piece that was running there. Okay, so immanence and transcendence. So transcendence is so you get this in and out, in and out, in and out, okay? And religious language is saying there is something that is not that. Our attention, the worldly attention, is always caught up with emotional life. And our thoughts, and our bodies, and our families, and our mortgage, and it goes on and on and on. So I always ask people, okay, maybe you're not religious, but what do you mean by spirituality? What is that? Define it for me. And I quite often people, well, I don't know, I'm just spiritual. They don't have a clear idea. So transcendence, and what is transcendent? What is transcendent? Well, awareness is transcendent. Because awareness is not the waves. I can feel like now, again, as Our Ladies came and I felt the same reaction, and I want to just leave me. So there's the same reaction coming up, right? But the awareness is not the reaction, right? The awareness knows, oh, this is a reaction, be careful. This is a negative reaction around friends that I love. Be careful. Practice right speech. But the awareness is not negative or positive. It is stainless. It has no color. It has no quality. The awareness knows. Immanent. So that's transcendent. It's not that I don't feel things. Not I don't feel disturbed when people come and go. I feel that, obviously. And I rather, it wouldn't happen. But that's just, it's okay. It's life. So I feel things which I like and I dislike. That's the way I'm conditioned. There's nothing wrong with conditioning, is there? There's nothing wrong with that. It just is. So to think that I can control life in some kind of way where I just get what I want is absolutely foolishness, isn't it? But then to always be reactive or try to control life or always get what I want, that's, it just doesn't work that way. So there is this liking and disliking, liking and disliking. That's the worldly. But awareness knows liking. Awareness knows disliking. So it's transcendent in the way that it doesn't mean I get out of anything. It doesn't mean I don't feel life as a human being, that I don't feel the inputs of heat and cold and disappointment. It's just that my reference point or my refuge in Buddhism, my refuge, is not the movement, but it's that which knows the movement. It's not the quality of the experience, but it's the awareness of qualities coming and going, and that is awareness. Awareness knows. Immanent, so that's transcendent. Immanent is that's always here now. Awareness is always here now, right? It's not tomorrow. You don't say like tomorrow I'm going to be immanent, or tomorrow I'll be aware. You don't do that. You're just aware. It's this now, right here, immanent. Transcendent, immanent, transcendent. And that's pointing to that which is truly liberating. Now, quite often in modern kind of self-improvement kind of philosophies, quite often we're just trying to fix the emotional things and get them all right. But that's endless. You can try to fix your personality till the cows come home. You'll never get it right. Your person will always be disappointing. Unless you're arrogant, in which case it'll always be great. Right? So if you're arrogant, oh, I'm the greatest thing since sliced bread. And if you're into self-despair, then I'm a hopeless case. But those are just opinions and views. That's all they are, right? So personality can be known. You are not your personality. You are not like a good guy or a bad guy. You're not even male or female. Well, yes. And then how do you translate that? Well, awareness is neither male nor female. Certainly awareness is localized in female forms or in male forms, in older bodies or younger bodies. So awareness right now through this bodily form is a 67-year-old kind of bodily form, which is male. But maleness can be known as an object. I've never my awareness hasn't experienced femaleness, because that's not what this body is about. It's about maleness. But maleness can be known. Feelings of being a man or an older man, that can be known. But awareness is neither male nor female. Is my awareness different than a woman's awareness? Is my awareness different than a Chinese awareness? Or a Sri Lankan awareness? Or a 12-year-old awareness? Or a 80-year-old awareness? Is it different? I don't think so. Was awareness different for you last week? Your experiences last week were different, right? Or when you were 20 years old, my experiences when I was 20 years old, can't remember much, but they were different than maybe now. But was the awareness any different? Is awareness really change? So you look like it's, what is awareness? And think about awareness, you can't find it because it's not a quality. It's imminent and it's transcendent. It's always here now. It's not a matter of time. It knows. It just knows. It knows. And so what we're trying to do in Buddhist spirituality is to abide as awareness. As awareness. And the way we do that is we try to notice the changing nature of things. So if you just listen to the sound of that fan, and you just listen to that and notice the changing nature of that fan. To me, that takes me to silence and awareness. And it's not about the sound of the fan, it's about my quality of attention. Now, what desire is always trying to find a certain quality. It's trying to find happiness and trying to get rid of unhappiness, which is okay. You've got to do that. But it's not transcendent. It doesn't really liberate you. It leaves, I look for happiness like any other guy. My body hurts, I move my posture and so on. But I realize that happiness on a sense level is limited. Don't dismiss it, but it's limited. And to me, it seems that spirituality is not about happiness and unhappiness. It's something much more profound. And that's the kind of deep peace of the mind when we're aware of change. And so in Buddhism, we're always stressing the nature of change. But quite often, people just hold that as a kind of Buddhist belief. And we believe in change. Yeah, okay. But actually, to apply that perception to fear, to irritation to someone, to apply that perception to bodily pain and be able to abide with awareness of change is quite difficult. So if you feel intimidated by someone or excited by something, to actually notice this as a changing condition, it takes quite a trained mind to do that, not to react to it, to buy into it. But if you notice it as change, then what you're emphasizing is not the object, but the awareness itself. And this, I think, is what the basic intention of spiritual life is. It's to emphasize awareness rather than the objects of awareness. Worldly life is emphasizing the objects of awareness. You know, the size of the car, or the beauty of the food, or the wonderful weather, or the beautiful maple leaves, or the terrible smell in his toilet, or whatever you want. It emphasizes objects. And this is what desire emphasizes. It's always emphasizing objects. And there's no end to it. There's no end to it. So we do our very best to create good societies, to feed our children, to take care of each other. Those are the worldly dharmas. And they're very, very important, very important. But also what's important is the spiritual life. And the spiritual life is about awakening to change and abiding in awareness of change and seeing that that's what you can trust. Because the rest you can't trust. You don't know. You do your very best. So like here, we build a monastery We try to make it a comfortable place and so on and so forth. But the point of it isn't the bricks and mortar. The point of it is awareness, awareness of change. And then we enter into what I would say is the spiritual life, immanent, transcendent. And these are really interesting words to kind of look at. All right, with all that, I shall leave that for your reflection then.
Namayam Namakataya Sadhukaram Dadamase Sadhu.